Hi, Salam.
Hi.
So I'm not sure exactly how the format of this should be, but for those listening, I guess, like for those who don't know, Salam is, I believe, the president of diversity and inclusion, and she's a sophomore in the ILR school here at Cornell. And yeah, that's what we know about Salam thus far, but I really want to get into like talking about your role as president of diversity and inclusion and what that entails on student assembly.
So pretty much I'm in charge of the committee diversity and inclusion. So like throughout the whole school year, we work on like different resolutions to try to implement more accessible ways for more marginalized voices on campus, and also to increase inclusion efforts with different organizations on campus. So like a current resolution that we're working that we're trying to get passed whenever the next SA meeting is scholarships for minority organizations on campus because they're the least funded. So if you're a part of like an organization that's specific to a marginalized group, then they would be able to apply for the application and be eligible for like $500 for their org. So like stuff like that.
Word. That's cool. So like my class, like it's the class is called Black Women in Political Leadership. It's taught by Carol Boyce Davies, and like it really gets into like the different biases that women experience and women are like subject to when they're in like political spaces, which are usually like predominantly like white, predominantly male, right? So like also I highly recommend you take this class. It just like brings like a different perspective. But we kind of want to know like about your leadership story and what made you want to like not only have political aspirations but just choose to join the student assembly and take on like a role such as the president of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
That's a loaded question. So, like you said, why did I want to be a leader? Do you mean like on campus or like in general?
More so like I guess referring to your political aspirations. Like why you're so passionate about politics, one, and then two, like how you sort of became introduced to joining the student assembly and getting like sort of a political role on campus.
I wanted to like a leadership role in like my political journey, I guess. It started like back in high school. It was like my sophomore year or something, because like I was always just passionate for like social justice issues, because I'm different. I'm marginalized in many aspects, in many areas. I'm a first gen student. I'm a Black woman. I'm bisexual. What else? I'm a daughter of a refugees. It's a lot. Low income. Like it's just everything. So like, and I got very tired of all of the just like all of the politics and all the people who are in power. Just obviously, this country's not built for us. It wasn't built by us. It wasn't. Wait, it was built by us. My fault. Whoa. It was built by us, but it's not for us. So yeah, I was just very interested in that because I want to be able to make, I always wanted to like be able to make an impact and always just advocate for marginalized voices. Yeah. And let's see, what was the other question?
I was how you got introduced to student assembly.
So my freshman year of, yeah, my freshman year, I was very interested in student government because at this time I like to say I was very naive in my head. I was like, wow, this will be able to like make the most impact. I was very like more policy based than like community organizing based. So I really thought that was the best route to go. But yeah, I was very interested in it. And the Black community at Cornell is amazing. Because I remember I went to like one SA meeting, and I was like, it was just an interest meeting, or whatever. And it was these two Black people came up to me, and they were like, "Are you interested?" And I was like,
yes. And they're like, okay, we're helping with your campaign. We're doing everything to you. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, who are you? Like, who are these people? And they're like, don't worry about us. They're like, you're a Black woman on campus. You're a freshman. Like, we're here to help you. Come to us for anything. And I'm like, y'all don't even know me. Like, all we know is that you're Black. That's all that matters. And I was like, I love you guys so much. So yeah, that's actually how I got into student assembly. They helped me with my campaign. They helped me with everything. So, yeah, and like once I got into student assembly, I was very, very mad about how everything's being ran. So like the only reason I'm still in student assembly is because like there needs to be more Black voices on there because there isn't any, and they're the ones who are making a lot of decisions on campus. So yeah.
Yeah, I remember when attending the student assembly meeting last week, I think when they like voted on Resolution 30, I noticed that a lot of the people that tended to be, I'm sorry, my dog is in the background, but a lot of the people that tended to be like a lot more vocal about certain things tended to be white, they tended to be male, like, and they tended to be incredibly passionate about like the things they were saying. But I guess my question for you is, do you think there are issues that you're better, better suited to address as a Black woman? Like, do you use like a specific lens when you address certain problems on student assembly specifically?
Yes, definitely. Like, for example, with Resolution 30 / Resolution 11, the same thing about police disarmament, a lot of the people on it, all the people who voted no, they were all, actually, yeah, they were all white, except for one person, but she was half white. Anyways, that's not the point. The point is that all of them kept trying to say and define what is racist and what isn't racist. And like that right there is a problem. If a Black person is telling you something is racist, don't argue, don't deny, don't do anything. You just have to admit the fact that it's racist. Like as a person of privilege, as a person of power, as an oppressor, you can't say what isn't racist. So it's just like scenarios like that. I believe that like as a Black woman that like as that through those lenses, I am able to, I guess, try to implement change through the essay because I'm trying to like have them listen more to the BIPOC voices. And it's very difficult, very, very difficult. But here we are.
Yeah, so like getting like further into that and just like talking about like your voice on student assembly, right? And also like relating that to your passion for like politics and your career aspirations, how do you see your current experiences on student assembly shaping like the woman you're becoming in terms of like how vocal you are about certain things, how confident you are about your positions on certain things, just generally speaking?
Ironically, you would think that I would become less confident after the outcomes of Resolution 11, how everything went down. But honestly speaking, it just like increased my confidence even more in like everything that I want to pursue and everything, my like positions on many stances, because they people who voted no to Resolution 11 and all the people who like are on their side, they are purposely trying to intimidate the Black organizers for speaking out against harassment. They keep purposely trying to find new ways in order to intimidate us. And like I've seen like throughout since the start of Resolution 11, like back in what was like November, maybe end of October, I don't even remember, it just like actually helped me gain a lot more confidence, because I was like, I just kept thinking to myself like, I'm not going to let this slide by. I'm not going to let these people try to like get the best of me. Like that's not happening. So I've actually had to come in like a much stronger leader, in my opinion, since this all started, which is very ironic because that is the exact opposite of what they wanted. So yeah.
Interesting. Actually, I wouldn't expect that. Like me being a Black man, like the type of person I am, I've always been like an introvert. So I wouldn't really, I feel like it doesn't take much for me to not want to say anything.
Right.
But like given like the biases that you're subject to, and given like how I should say provocative some of the members of the student assembly have been, especially when undergoing like the just different agendas, and just at the meetings being very condescending and very aggressive in the way that they speak on issues especially presented by the Diversity and Inclusion Committee, I feel as though like that would make me want to hold my tongue a lot sooner.
That was the thing. At first, when everything was going down, I was extremely overwhelmed. Like, I did not know how to go about anything because in my head, I'm still a little freshman. Like, I just got to campus type. And I just, like, the older SA members, the ones that, like, I work with and, like, I genuinely trust, they're, like, I see them as my mentors. So, like, when this all started going down, I would, wait, can I name drop in this? Okay, specifically Uche, like, I would go to him every 5 seconds. I'd be like, I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know how to go about this. Like, what do I do? Whatever. And, like, he was extremely encouraging because, like, you know, he's also facing a lot of harassment. He's still speaking out against them. And, like, it was, like, through the help. It was just genuinely, I think it's just because of the support I'm receiving is why, like, I'm not, like, shutting down. Because, like, I'm also an introvert, too. So, like, typically, I wouldn't be, like, so out, like, I am outspoken, but, like, I would get more scared in these type of situations because it is very scary what's been going on. But, honestly, it's just made me more passionate and it's just fuel to the fire at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sort of like, I see how you brought up Uche. I kind of want to know, like, what do you see in, like, what differences do you see between, like, men's leadership style and women's leadership style just on the student assembly?
Well, it depends. Are we talking about all men or, like, the white men or?
White men and then, like, all men if they're, like, different leadership styles, both, actually.
The main difference in the leadership styles I've noticed between the men and women. Actually, yes, because Kat's president, so I have seen many, many differences. Specifically, like, for in general, like, for all men versus all women, the men have been, like, I don't want to say aggressive, but they're, like, very straight to the point, not try to listen to the other side, like, it's my way or the highway type situation. And, like, the women in power I've seen, especially Kat, they have been, like, try to be more understanding and, like, try to listen to all sides and be more empathetic. But I think that also goes into gender politics because, like, Kat has always just been, like, on her toes and try to keep, like, everybody happy because this year everyone has been judging her way, way more than any other president. They're treating her really wrong and, like, I genuinely believe it's just because of the fact she's a woman president. But, yeah, those are the main differences I see. But in terms of, like, white men versus black men leaders and, like, the differences in their leadership styles, the black men I've noticed, and I think also which is the only black leader, but they try to be way more inclusive, like, way more inclusive. Like, anytime me or Mariah would face, Mariah's also a black woman, anytime we would face any backlash, we should be first to, like, speak up. And he'll be the first to say, like, y'all are treating black women horrible. Like, this is not how we're supposed to treat black women. They're the first to speak out and the first to get hate, whatever. But then the white men on student assembly, they will never acknowledge that. They'll never acknowledge the differences between white men and white women and black women. They'll never acknowledge the fact of their own personal biases. They'll just go about and say, this is all, you know, peace, love, and happiness. We're all the same, but y'all aren't treating us the same.
Interesting. I feel like referencing, like, just the people that tend to that choose not to acknowledge their biases, I should say, are these usually, like, the same people that initiate the harassment?
Yes.
So, like, how do you deal with just being harassed? Because it's one thing to be, like, on such a large scale platform, like, if you're the vice president of the United States, right? Like, if you're Michelle Obama, not the vice president, if you're the first lady of the United States and you're being scrutinized on so many levels, just for so many things that have nothing to do with your actual, I should say, political agenda or what you stand for in any regard, and it could have to do with your appearance, the community that you come from, just like your height, your hair, like anything, right? Like, how do you go about being scrutinized, just being at Cornell University?
Honestly, I would have to say it's just very big on my support system. Like, the support that I do receive, it, like, very, it changes the way I perceive everything. So, like, at first, when I really, like, sat down and thought about it, I, like, started to get very overwhelmed and, like, very frustrated. And it's like, I am a Black woman, and me speaking out, I receive this hate, whatever, right? But, and honestly, if I didn't have support, or, like, if my friends were, like, equally frustrated, not saying they're not equally frustrated, if they were to see the harassment as, like, oh, my God, it's the end of the world, then I would see it as, oh, my God, it's the end of the world. But, like, the support system that I have, like, specifically on the essay, we always just brush off the harassment. We're like, yeah, it's really messed up, and, like, we're very angry about it, but we're not going to let it get to us, because that's, like, what they want from us. And we're supposed to, like, keep going and just keep it pushing and, like, just add it more to our argument about the fact that, like, we are receiving harassment because we're BIPOC organizers. So, yeah, I would have to say it's mainly because of the fact of the support system. And I'd, like, just keep convincing myself, like, don't let it get to me, because, like, that's exactly what they want to see.
And just, like, getting a little deeper into being scrutinized in a position of power, can you give, like, any examples where you personally, as well as Uche, because I know Uche was harassed to the third degree on all social media platforms, but primarily focusing on, like, just the ways that you've been harassed. I'm pretty sure, I think somebody's made, like, a fake email account or something along those lines.
So today, this is what I can say. I don't know who did this, but one of the conservatives from Cornell gave out my information, like my Cornell email and everything, and they gave it to people from Young America's Foundation, which is like a conservative organization for like people in college and high school, whatever. And like they reached out to me talking about like they want to interview me for their newspaper, whatever, but like they're extremely, extremely biased. Like they're the types who like call leftist snowflakes type all over their Instagram page. So I didn't respond to it. And I was just like, very angry. I was like, who gave out my information and said that was okay? Like, because it's one thing, because like my information is public, is open to the public, because like VP of DNI is like on the Cornell website, whatever. But to give it out to non-Cornell students for those purposes, because like that article was I knew if I were to do that interview, the article would completely skew everything that I said. And that happened with the Cornell Sun too. The Cornell Sun reached out to me because they had a lot of articles about everything that's been happening with SA. And when the Cornell Sun reached out to me, they misquoted me. And their articles, they look bad on like the other SA members who like voted yes, or like on the executive committee who's been doing everything. And like it was very obvious that like the newspaper had a side. Even though like they're supposed to be neutral, it was very clear by the writing whose side they were on, which was not mine. During the SA meetings, this one time, oh God, this gets me so mad every time I think about it. This one time during the SA meeting, I was explaining the fact about how Ithaca Police Department almost arrested me. And I was explaining the whole story, and it was very traumatic. It was very traumatic for me. And one of the white guys on the SA, like one of the voting members, he was like, the newspaper article said otherwise, so how do we know you're not lying and not like, you know, fabricating the story? And it was like, I just unpacked all this trauma in front of like maybe 30, 40 people right now, and you're insinuating that I would lie about that. And then when I started to defend myself, he was like, oh, why are we being so mad at each other? Like, you're being so aggressive to me right now. And I'm like, this is literally just my talking voice. It's just like small, it's like microaggressions, but also like blatant forms we've been also getting too, like, you know, with Uche. It's been called N-word, monkey, said he's been spreading AIDS because he's gay. Just been like everything we've been receiving, but yeah.
So just taking all of this in and more so, looking at yourself, say, 10 years from now, working towards your career aspirations, how does this shape your leadership style, and how does it shape like your aspirations and just your goals in general?
Like I said, this whole incident or ongoing incident really like helped shape my confidence even more, because one of the main things that like it was very like a reality moment, reality check for me, because like I've been very open about like my beliefs. I've been like I was the ones who were like leading the protests with like the megaphone back in my hometown. I'm like the one who like makes the speeches at the protests, whatever. Like everyone knows who I am and like my views on everything. So when I got to college, it was very different, because like for the most part, everyone back home, they all agree with me. Like there's no differences. Got to college and I'm like, oh, people actually don't believe in this stuff. And it's like, I want freedom for everybody, but it's just crazy to me. So it was a very reality check, because I feel like this really helped me in the long run, because it's like, this is going to be what I'm going to be facing from now until however long I choose to pursue this. So although as saddening that is to think about, once again, it just kind of gave me more confidence, because it kind of just got me more excited. It's like, oh, okay, I'm ready for the real world now. Like, okay, we got this. Not at all, but one day at a time.
So what do you think changes when women, generally speaking, from your experiences, from your perspective, just your point of view, what do you think changes when women get into a position of political power?
They're more scrutinized. When women are, men don't like that. It's just a whole barrel of microaggressions and just scrutinize. You're just more scrutinized. You're more under the light. So like, if you make one mistake, your one mistake is gonna be held at a much different light than a man making that same exact mistake. Like for example, the president of SA, Kat, she has been like during the whole Resolution 11, she has been mischaracterized a lot. Like for a perfect example, the Resolution 11, she's a co-sponsor, meaning like she helped write it. So during the meeting, when we first introduced it, people kept interrupting her and saying like, as president, you shouldn't chair right now because you're being biased, you're in favor of it, da da da, like that kind of stuff. And it's like, there, every other resolution she sponsored, but she still chaired the meeting. Men in the past on SA have co-sponsored many, many resolutions and still chaired the meeting, but y'all never said that to them. But the second Kat is in power, you guys are mad that she's chair and being biased when she much very is not. So now every single meeting, she's always so careful to make sure she's saying the right things. And you could tell by the way she speaks in the meetings. She always tries to make sure she hears every side, because she knows if she makes one mistake, it's like, it's going to be all over the sun. It's going to be all over social media. Everyone's going to scrutinize her way more.
So like, since we've addressed like, I should say the scrutiny that comes in terms of like, or since we addressed like women being scrutinized heavily on like their competence, right? I feel as though generally speaking, like in politics, right, we see a lot of women are also criticized based on like their appearance, their clothing, their background, their family. And I know a specific instance where, although it wasn't a woman being scrutinized, I remember I think it was George that spoke out at the most recent student assembly meeting to interrupt a graduate student that was sharing their beliefs on whatever was going on, whatever was taking place at that point in time. And George was kind of putting them down. He was using provocatives. He was cursing at them. Like, I want to know if you've seen anything like along those lines, but more so gearing towards physical appearance, clothing, family, background, just anything along those lines. In your experience in student assembly or any other, I should say, political space or space where you've been in a position of leadership.
I'm thinking, in student assembly specifically, you won't see that, because the thing, at least with the SA members, their racism is hidden. They're not direct with it. They don't have the guts to be direct with it. So in student assembly, I have not experienced that, but in the past I have. There'd be times when like my clothing choices, whatever, they would say about how like it's just not appropriate for the time, like for the instance I was in. I'm like, yo, I'm wearing the same thing as someone else. Or well, that goes high school, just the dress code policy. The dress code policy is very sexist. So that whole situation. My best friend, right? So my closest guy friend, he's like the male version of me. So he equally does the protests with me. Like me and him are the ones who lead the protests all the time. We're like the duo dynamic, whatever. And it's always very funny for me because he definitely gets treated so much more different than me. We would literally... Like, okay, so at the most recent protest we did together, me and him both gave a speech, right? And after we were done with the speech, this, like, I think he was, like, a candidate for running for Congress, right? He went to the protest, and, like, he wanted to go speak to Mark. And then I was standing right next to him. He didn't even acknowledge me. And I'm like, and then Mark, he, like, understands the dynamics and everything. And he was like, meet Salam. And I'm like, hello. And he's like, hi, who are you? And I'm like... You didn't just see me with the megaphone. You didn't just see me doing all this stuff. Like, I'm doing the equal amount of work as him, but you're acknowledging him, not me. So it'd be stuff like that I'd experience a lot.
See, I see. So do you think as you continue with your political career, as you continue placing yourself in these spaces of leadership, do you think that... those who occupy the same space as you with privileged backgrounds, with privileged situations and circumstances, do you think they're gonna begin to be more open about their biases? Do you think they're gonna tend to vocalize more what they feel is wrong that has nothing to do with you in terms of competence?
I feel like the only way I see that, at least in my experience, the only people who ever speak out for me is never white people. It's always black people. So black men would speak out for me. Like that has happened a lot, but not once has it been a white woman, white man, or anything like that. So, I mean, at least I'm a very firm believer. I don't believe in allies. Like I really don't think there's true allyship. Because never once in my life has a white person ever spoke up for me. We would be in the same room witnessing the same thing that's happening to me, silence. And then and this has happened to me so many times. 5 minutes later, they'll text me, I'm so sorry. I was just so scared. I didn't know what to do. Like, you're an amazing person, da 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 da. That happened to me at the SA meeting. It happened to me, like, all of high school. Like, they wouldn't, like, speak out on it until I address it. So for example, during the SA meeting, this was maybe the beginning of the month, I address, like, as vice president of diversity and inclusion, whatever, I proposed like a resolution to like the SA members and to the public. There was a lot of people at this meeting, and like the resolution was pretty, it was very basic. It was just saying for student assembly in Cornell to take a stance on Black Lives Matter and like support it. And while I was like mid presentation, someone told me to go F myself. And I'm like, okay. And when that happened, silence. Not a single SA member said anything. Not that white boy who always interrupts people said anything. Like, not a single person said anything when that happened. And then I had to defend myself. After it was just silence for a few seconds, I had to be the one to say, okay, that's wrong. This is why we need this resolution, X, Y, and Z. And no one still said anything until I made it public. The second I posted on my Instagram story about what happened, that's when I had the white SA members text me, I'm so sorry that happened. I should have speaked up, da, 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 da. And it's like, I don't believe in allies. So I really don't believe that. At least in a pessimistic / realistic view, I don't believe that there's going to be a time where people are going to acknowledge their biases because they're in the wrong, and people don't like being in the wrong. They will only admit to it once it's shown once it's made aware that they're wrong to the public and they're looked bad. Because at the end of the day, it's all about appearances and politics. So, yeah.
Okay. So, given your views on, like, allyship, right? Let's say... let's say... Yeah, he's fine. Thank you. Let's say there are 10, 11, 12-year-old girls listening to this podcast with just aspirations of joining the Senate, joining the House of Representatives, or even joining like their student body or student government, right? And hearing this, they're discouraged because they may share some of the same, they may have things in common with you in terms of like being from a marginalized group. What would you say to, I should say, encourage them to continue to aspire to enter the spaces where these biases exist and enter the spaces where their voice may be looked down upon or taken as less than?
So, like, I feel like everything I say is pessimistic, but it's also reality. So I would say definitely it's going to be hard. It's definitely going to be hard. There's going to be times where racism is right in your face. There's going to be times you're going to be harassed, scrutinized for just believing what is right. And I say, just do everything you do for the right reasons. Don't do anything because of the fact, like, you want to put on a resume. Don't do anything because of the fact you think, like, appearances, it's going to make you look better in the public eye. I feel like the main reason why I haven't really, like, given, like, this is going to sound so cliche, but it's so true. Like, the main reason why I haven't really given up on, like, my political aspirations or, like, essay, even after everything I've been receiving, is just because of the fact, like, I'm very passionate about this. Like, I'm not doing this for the resume because, like, I don't need it. I'm not doing this for public appearances because I really don't care how people view me, which is very evident as Reddit does not like me at the moment. But I'm literally, the reason why I just keep going is just because of the fact, like, I believe that this is wrong and I believe there needs to be a change and I believe that we need to actively work towards to get the change. And if no one's gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. So I would just definitely, like, emphasize the fact, if you're passionate for it, go for it. It's gonna be a hard and long journey, but it might be worth it. If, I don't know if it's gonna be worth it. I haven't been that far along yet, but it might be.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, like, I feel as though even speaking from like a Black man's perspective, right? Even speaking, like, I'm still Black, but I do have the privilege of being a man in every space that I enter, to whereas my voice is counted more than, or my voice is listened to, I should say, more than the average Black woman's voice is. But at the same time, even growing up, I still had the same, I was raised the same way where it was like, my dad would always say, like, you're going to be in these spaces where people are always going to see you how they see you. People are always going to see you with these biases in mind, and they're not going to do anything to try to check their own biases. They're not going to do anything to try to minimize their biases, minimize their prejudice. They're going to see you how the rest of the world sees you. And at the same time, like, you have to be ready for that. Although it shouldn't be that way, you should still make sure that you're passionate about what you're doing. Because when you're passionate about what you're doing, your voice will, it'll show whenever you're speaking on something. Whenever you're speaking on something you're passionate about, it will translate in whatever words you're attempting to say, whatever you're trying to get across. And I feel as though I really like what you said, because you didn't really try to minimize the biases and minimize the struggles, I should say, that you are subject to on a daily basis, because there are going to be times when you're harassed. There are going to be times where people look at you through their own biased lens. There are going to be times when people try not to listen to you, or people may question your competence. But if you're really passionate about something, you're not leaving that much up for them to question.
Right. No, that's very definitely evident. I also found it very interesting what you said that your dad told you. Because, like, from an immigrant perspective, I did not hear that story growing up. I heard the exact opposite.
Yeah, honestly speaking, like, my dad was really like active in my education growing up. So he would also tell, like, he would always tell me, like, whenever I would tell him about my dreams of being X, Y, and Z, there would also be these times growing up where I would say, leave the house with my durag on or leave the house dressed a certain way. And he would, I wouldn't say he would try to check me, but he would try to, I should say, warn me that when you go out doing X, Y, and Z, people are going to look at you as X, Y, and Z.
Right. No, perfect. Yeah. But it's more the fact of, like, because at least I, this is very much from the immigrant's perspective. My parents just want my life in America to be as easy as possible and be as successful as possible because, you know, they gave up a lot to get here. So it'd be like growing up, my mom would, like, try to, like, help me conform to, like, whites, to the white people. Like, my mom would be the one always straightening my hair. My dad would be the one. And he would say how it is. He's like, life is hard, but as long as you got your education, you can get through it. And, like, every time I tell him, I'm like, yeah, but I'm Black. Like, even if I have an education, it's still going to be hard. And he's like, they are both very, like, clouded by, like, the American dream. Because they just want me to, like, just go about life as easy as possible. And, like, they love the fact, maybe not love, but we have differences. We have our differences about, like, my political aspirations only because of the fact, like, my mom gets scared for me. Like, when I was at the protest over the summer, it was, like, maybe 3,000, over 3,000 people at the crowd. I had no idea I was speaking to that many people. But when I was, like, giving my speech or whatever, my mom was like, Salam, you're not scared? And I'm like, scared about what? And she was like, we're Black, like, that this could be very bad for you. And she, like, kind of gave me this lecture, and I'm like, okay, from a parent's perspective, from an immigrant's perspective, like, I see where you're coming from. I'm gonna still do it though, but I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, definitely understand. And just, like, focusing more on, like, the Black Lives Matter protest that took place over the summer, did you ever, like, experience any fear? Because I remember over the summer, there was a woman, I believe she was our age, like, she was 19, Toyin, and she was killed for really just speaking up. So I just want to know, like, do you ever come across, like, any fear in speaking up for what you believe in?
Honestly, it didn't really click in my head that what I was doing is bad until maybe, like, midway through the summer. Because, like, in my head, I'm like, everyone believes this. It's okay. I'm just speaking my truth. And, like, my friend, Eli, he sat me down. And he was like, Salam, you don't get scared. Like, I'm really worried for your safety. And I'm like, did I do something? Like, what's wrong? And he was like, no, because of the you're a Black woman speaking out against everything. And you saw what happened to, I don't know how to pronounce her name, so I don't want to chop it, but her. And he was just, like, very concerned for me. And then, like, I've never seen him so scared before. And I was like, oh, my God, am I supposed to be scared now? And honestly, I'm not. I'm really not scared. And, like, I don't, like I said, if people around me are like, oh my God, you should be scared, then I, like, start getting hesitant. Like, am I supposed to be? But, like, I'm not. I feel like I should be, but I'm not.
I mean, me personally speaking, I can't necessarily give a complete perspective because obviously, like, I'm still a Black man. But I would say, I don't think that you should necessarily be scared, but more so, like, aware.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, aware of, like, the dangers that are in front of you when you choose to do things. Because just, like, even in class, like, I remember there was this woman in Brazil. Her name was Mariel Franco. She sent a tweet speaking on Brazilian police brutality because they had killed, I believe, like, an unarmed Black teen. And the next day, she was shot 9 times in her car. Like, just, I think it's just, like, things like that that are really, like, eye-opening in terms of, like, how disapproving people are of Black women, especially just having a voice and utilizing that voice to make the changes that they see fit in the world.
But I feel like, for me, like I said, I didn't really get that realization until, like, closer when I got to campus. It's, like, over the summer, like, where I'm from, I'm surrounded by minorities, BIPOC. Like, we're all Black, we're all people of color, right? So, like, when I went to this one protest, Jersey City, which is predominantly Black, we were standing outside the precinct, and it was just all Black people, and, like, the police officers were standing on the roofs of the building with, like, full-on gear, guns and everything. Like, they would look like they were ready for war. and there was drones flying over us, and like I was a bit scared, but like not that scared. Like, I felt safe and comfortable. It was just because of the fact that I was surrounded by Black people, and like I was surrounded by a lot of Black men too, and like that did make me feel a little safer because in my head, I like to think like they'll protect me, because like you know privilege and everything. But when I got to Ithaca, when I got to campus, I was like, switch whatever, because I attended this protest, and it was outside of the Ithaca Police Department, like their precinct, and I immediately got scared. The second I got there, I was terrified because I looked at the crowd and I'm like, oh, I'm the only Black woman here, not Black person, Black woman. Everyone there was white, and I was like, okay, so if this goes south, I'm the one they're gonna hurt first. So I was like, I started to get a bit scared, and then I was hearing like, okay, I don't even know why we were protesting. I just knew that like cars needed help, so I like I went out. It's like, okay, like what's going on? And they're like, oh yeah, they arrested two Black men, and I'm like, oh, cool. And then when towards the end of the night, like Ithaca Police Department, they like start coming closer, like they start coming towards us, whatever. And then, like, something in my gut told me, I'm like, Salam, you're the only Black woman here. Like, this is a good cause, but this is not your fight. Leave and, like, be safe. Like, get out. So, like, I left. And I was, like, really upset at the fact that I left. But I was, like, it was for the best. And the second I left, they started, like, they were cruel to the protesters. Like, they put them on the ground. They slammed them on the ground, tased them, tear gassed, everything. And the first person they hurt, the Black man. And I'm like, okay. So I was smart in leaving. I felt horrible because I broke solidarity. Like I was really upset that night. But I knew for a fact if I stayed, I would have been way worse off than the white people there. So yeah, that was my moment of realization.
So I keep hearing you say like you were looking for this like feeling of protection, right?
Yeah.
And I also want to talk about the quote-unquote strong Black woman narrative that's pushed like in the media. So I want to know, like, given the narrative and given like just like your feelings for protection in like such a, I should say, heightened space, such an intense space, right? What do you think about the strong Black women narrative in terms of how it shapes you as a political leader? Like maybe in spaces like student assembly meetings, if you're being scrutinized, like I remember earlier you mentioned you didn't believe in allyship because nobody in your past has been there to speak out for you if they were white, like nobody has really been there for you. But at the same time, as soon as you did start speaking out, like as soon as you did start addressing the injustices that may have came your way, you noticed that you always tended to lead your own effort. So I should say, like, what do you think about the strong Black woman narrative as it pertains to your feeling for your desire for protection, as well as maybe just the way you interact in either political spaces, activist spaces, either one?
I am tired. I am exhausted. The strong Black woman narrative is this narrative that, like, It's just enforcing the fact that like it puts us on a different pedestal than everybody else. It's saying that, okay, because we lead our own efforts, because of the fact no one wants to help us, they're strong. They don't need help. They don't need any guidance. Like they'll be okay. And that's not the fact at all. Because at the end of the day, we're human too. We need the help. And it's just very tiring because people, like, when I, like, do everything, I always hear people say, like, you got this, Salam, you're so strong, da 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 da. And I'm like, I'm tired of being strong. I want y'all to help me. I want more of an effort. Like, I shouldn't have to be doing all of this at, what, 19 years old? I'm not even 20 yet, and I'm doing this. Like, I'm tired. And it's very frustrating, but I also have to acknowledge the fact my place of privilege because I am lighter skinned. So, like, my sister, she's darker than me, and, like, she faces worse than me when everything, like, the strong Black woman narrative is even worse on, like, darker skinned women because of the fact, like, colorism and because of the fact, like, they're seen less as human or whatever. So, it's very frustrating and it's very tiring because of the fact, like, strong Black woman narrative is it's, what's the word, like, contradicting, and saying that we don't need help, and we can, and it also, like, enforces the idea that, like, because we're strong, we don't need help, we don't need, like, allyship, when that's not the case. We want some protection too.
I understand. That's, honestly, that was something that I wasn't really familiar with until probably, like, this summer, just, like, the narrative itself, because you see things like, you see things in the media, like Breonna Taylor, you see things like what happened to Toyin, especially. I wish I could say her entire name, because I definitely would, but you see the things that happened to her, and then in the media, you see, like, she was such a strong woman, like, you see, like, she spoke up for what she believed in. She was so passionate, blah, blah, blah. But, like, at the end of the day, when the time came for somebody to protect her, nobody did. And it really caused, like, the worst of circumstances, like, honestly speaking. And I just, I feel as though that was, like, really eye-opening for me as a Black man. It, for me as somebody that never really looks for protection, because I wasn't really... I've never had to fear for my life in the same way that most women have. Like, I know, for example, all of my friends that are women, I should say, they get into Ubers and they have a heightened anxiety, right? Because there's this fear of kidnapping, there's this fear of trafficking, there's this fear that your Uber driver is gonna do, like, whatever they may deem necessary or whatever they want at the end of the day. But, like, me, like, I'll get into an Uber, I'll go to sleep. Like, I don't have to think about, like, any of that, because at the end of the day, I know, like, I have the privilege to, whereas nobody is really gonna, I should say, check me as a 6'1" Black man. Nobody is looking to kidnap me, you know what I mean? And, like, a lot of my friends that happen to be women, like, they're smaller, like, that. I feel as though it's, like, really interesting to just look as, like, see that Black women are, like, so, I should say, they seem as delicate, but at the same time, this view of Black women, that they're so delicate, right? It never comes into play when the strong narrative is pushed. It's like the strong narrative is pushed by men at our own convenience. You know what I mean? Like you're only strong when we want you to be strong. But in the media, when you see men talking about Black women as queens, men talking about Black women as, say, just like perfect wives, blah, blah, blah. It's like, where is this energy when you're pushing the strong narrative, when a Black woman needs to be protected, when a Black woman is in a space where there are multiple biases and she's being scrutinized by white men, or even other Black men or white women? Like, there's just so many, I should say, levels to the scrutiny. And I feel like Black women get it all. Right. And nobody goes to acknowledge it Nobody goes to acknowledge it, like, 100% of the time. Nobody's consistent with acknowledging the biases that are, I should say, brought upon by Black women. I just think that's, like, really interesting. Even when Black men specifically were being called out on social media over the summer, and saying, like, when Black women would say, like, you don't care about us, right? And then Black men would go out of their way to say, like, we do care about you, blah, blah, blah. But then the same things would continue to happen. The same Black women would continue to be scrutinized about the same things. You know what I mean? Like, I just find that, like, a really interesting, I should say, contradiction between, like, what we as men say we're gonna do and then what we go on to do. But we happen to do it, like, only at our easiest convenience. You know what I mean?
No, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. Main thing about being a Black woman that's very difficult is, like, I remember I had someone asked me before, like, in terms of intersectionality, which one affects your life more, being Black or being a woman? And it's like, that's not a real question. You can ask that to other people, but being a Black woman, every aspect, both of them intersect 24/7. There's never one moment I'm more Black than I'm more Black. And it's very annoying, because perfect example. I have so many examples. And it's
I think it's really interesting that you say that, because last week I did a presentation, a group presentation on like Caribbean women in politics, right? And I told you about Marielle Franco. And I'm not sure if it was her or another Black woman politician in Brazil, but they said, like, when it comes to these marginalized groups that you're a part of, right, when it comes to, like, intersectionality, you shouldn't look at it like which is worse. You should realize that they all different means of oppression will sort of, like, interlock with each other in the way that you carry yourself, in the way that you live. I just find that like really crazy just to hear you saying that and hear like a politician from like 10, 20 years ago saying that, like just parallels.
But it's just like, I have so many different stories of just me being a woman by myself. I finally got my taser now, but this was before I got my taser. There was this one time I was in the store and it was like, predominantly Black, like everyone in the store was Black, but or Hispanic, right? White passing Hispanic. And I was just online, and this Black man comes up to me, he's like, hey, can you pay for this? And I'm like, no, I'm good. No. And he was just like, he just starts screaming at me. He's like, what did you say, B word? What the F did you just say, B word? Like, I effing asked you to do this, da, da, da. And he just starts screaming at me. I'm terrified. I'm like, what is this man about to do? Everyone's still staring. No one says anything. I'm like, no one's going to say anything for me. And, like, this man's twice my size, so I'm not going to say anything. And then he, like, finally is done screaming, walks out. I was waiting for my Uber. I didn't want to walk outside and wait outside there because he was there with his friends and they were all like still yelling, still angry. So I had to wait inside the store, hide in an aisle so that man wouldn't see me, just for me to take an Uber home. And I took the Uber home and I had to cut through the park to get to my house. This man stops me. He didn't even have a mask on and he stops me and I'm like, no. And I keep walking, I turn around, he starts following me. So I had to book it to my house, and turns out this man also lives on my street, so that's fun. But, and then when I make it to my house, that same day, my neighbors called the police on me and my mom, because they said that we were stealing their kids' toys and that we were on their property, da 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 da. And they were also blatantly racist, too, because of the fact, one, they called the cops, two, they thought we were stealing, and three, my friends told me they know them, and they're also just racist. So it's like, being a Black woman, you never catch a break. In the same day, I had to go through all of that. And my other neighbor is also very open racist. He told us that, what did he say? He was like, all Muslims and Ethiopians need to go back to their countries. Something about monkeys and stuff. I don't even know. I'm not even Muslim or Ethiopian, but yeah, that's beside the point. The point is, being a Black woman, you never catch a break. Every second, you're either trying to defend yourself from being a woman, defend yourself from men, or defend yourself from racist people who like deny your existence. So, yeah.
Wow. I do understand that. But I mean, like, I can only understand it to, like, a certain extent. You know what I mean? Because, like,
you never had to come home.
All my life, I've been a Black man. Like, I've never really been exposed to the dangers, the biases, and the traumas that women specifically have to experience. But just taking everything into account that we've just discussed, like, what do you think your biggest takeaway is from being a Black woman, right? And moving forward with, I should say, your career aspirations, because I see it as you're very confident, you're very passionate about entering these political spaces and making your change. But as we've discussed, like, just the different dangers when you actually do have the opportunity to make a change, when you're seen making that change. I just want to know, like, what your thoughts are, I should say, pertaining to your career aspirations and the dangers that are presented in front of you along the way.
I'm not saying I'm going to be on their level, but like, I think about like the Black Panther Party and how like Angela Davis was I honestly, I still don't know how she's alive, because like they always went for every single Black Panther Party person member, But she, you know, she was jailed multiple times. They killed Fred Hampton in his sleep because of the fact, like, he knew too much, was speaking out against the government, whatever, all of that. And, like, I'm just rethinking about history, rethinking about all the most prominent Black figures we had who were radical and, like, actually making a change. They all died. They all were assassinated. They all were jailed. So it is very scary thinking about it, but honestly, I try not to think about that. I just try to focus more on the aspect of, okay, Salam, how am I going to get to my goals? And when I get to my goals, how am I going to get to those goals? Because, like, right now, my goal is, okay, make it to law school. Okay, after law school, make it to, like, the political world. I'm like, okay, get it to the political world, which is more effective, policies or community organizing? Which one am I going to focus on more? And, like, my main thing is I just take it one day at a time. I try not to think about all the scary aspects. And, like, I try to very focus more, like, put more of my energy into my confidence, put more of my energy into, like, my passion rather than the fear. Because if you do that, then you're never going to get anywhere. So,
yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Seeing as it has been over an hour. Really? Yeah. Also, seeing that my laptop is going to die incredibly soon, I think now would be the best time for us to wrap up. And I think I would like to say, like, it's been, like, really great talking to you in this, through this lens, because normally, like, I interact with you, like, on a casual, and through a casual lens in, like, casual environments, and I never really get to speak to you in terms, I never get to speak to any of my, like, I never get to speak to any of my friends just discussing, like, the biases that they may face and how they combat those biases, how they take it day by day in terms of their career aspirations. But I just want to know if you, like, have any, like, final thoughts to share regarding anything that we've discussed.
I just want to comment about, that's very true. Like, our friends, all we want to talk about is DTV. Like, I want to talk about our goals. Like, I want to talk about our aspirations and everything. Like, it's okay. This was a very great conversation. Yeah, like you said, we never actually talked about anything besides conscious. It was a good conversation. Also, like, this conversation, like, saying this out loud kind of made me come to a realization about a lot of this stuff, because I like to be in denial a lot and kind of, like, ignore more problems. So this was also very needed. And also, like, a good venting session, because I'm very tired of the whole Black woman narrative. So this was needed. This was nice.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, once again, I just want to recommend that you take Africana 3206. It's Black Women in Political Leadership, taught by Carol Boyce Davies. I believe it counts towards your inequality studies minor, if that's something you want to pursue still. I feel as though the class is mostly made up of Black women, and I believe, like, there are a few white women in the class, there's a few Black men in the class, but interesting enough, which isn't that surprising, there's no white men in the class, right? But I feel as though, for me personally, this class has introduced me to different perspectives. And for the Black women in the class, I feel as though most of them, if not all of them, would say that it has definitely enhanced their perspectives through, like, just getting to speak with different guest speakers, getting to speak with Professor Carol Boyce Davies, just being introduced to all of the readings and being introduced to all of these people that are where you specifically do want to be in life. You know what I mean? Like, all of these people have been in spaces where you may see yourself in 10 years, where you may see yourself in 20 years. And all of these people have lived it, and all these people are, like, now speaking about it and writing about it. And I feel like you're really introduced to, I should say, just so much more than you would be taking any other class, reading, like, any single book. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a really, like, good class for enhancing your perspective.
Wait,
I'm sorry. I can't hear you. Can't hear you still. I'm serious.
I said, are you still recording?
Yes.
Okay. Then never mind.
Okay. Well, yeah, I just wanted to, like, just highly, like, I highly recommend taking that class. I also want to say, like, yeah, just just make sure you take your class, take that class, and continue to do what you're doing, because I see you leading in all of these spaces, and I see you doing like a great job in all of these spaces. Yeah, just continue to do what you're doing, and don't be deterred by any biases and prejudices you may come across. Well, yeah, since that's all we had really on like the agenda, I guess I'm gonna just let you go now. Go back, since it's finals week and everything, you have a lot on your plate. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay. Good night, Jayla.
Adios.